describe your wine as you cut up the steak
over
there.
Okay, so hand me your glass there, Johnny.
Yep.
And
awesome. Honors.
Thank you. And do I...
What am I going to do with this?
With what?
Well, I have a plate full of...
Dump it on the
crab
other plate.
Carcass.
That's the thing. Dump it on the other plate. Who cares?
All right. Well, I got to
just
say, yeah,
no, just stand up. Stand up. Oh, he's got them long arms. Look at that wingspan. Look at the wingspan on that man.
I'm 6'4".
Look at him there. Hand me your glass, thanks, Austin.
Here you go.
There you are there. So this wine is another one. This it's called Le Pigelet.
I can smell it from here.
This is it's a blend. It's a Grenache, Syrah, Carignan, Sisal, Mourvèdre. It's a red table wine, but it is made by one of the more. I see you sneaking a shrimp, mm-hmm. but it's made by one of the better houses, and it is, it's a fantastic wine, and it's another one of those wines that's completely approachable that you can come in, and have this steak, which would be great with it, or you can go a little higher if you want. I want you guys to notice when you eat this how. Not just the meat, but the fat has changed on it and the structure.
Delicious, Tech.
So yeah, it's a great wine. It's a really great wine. And this steak cuts like butter. Actually, I kind of want you guys to cut this other one because I want you to feel that. But I'm going to eat this piece.
Because that's a spinalis.
There it is.
For fuck's sake, dude.
Yeah.
So you're going to get this.
How familiar are you guys with dry aged beef?
Not familiar at all. I don't know. I don't think.
John, how about you?
I mean, to what level? Like, I know enough about it to be dangerous, but not enough about it to explain
it
to
people. Neither one of you guys took the spinalis like I wanted you to.
So sorry.
I just thought, you charlatans. So I'm going to give you the one with the fatty.
All right.
So I want you to eat this piece first. Johnny, I want you to eat this piece first. So this is widely considered the best part of the cow. And now it's on your plate. So with dry aging, what we do in dry aging is you put it in a controlled environment where you have a whole muscle. Yeah. How's that? How's that? How is that?
We're going to go on break. Oh, wait, no. Yeah.
So now, so that piece of meat right there.
Fucking sake, good Lord.
So that piece of meat, so the dry aging process of that, when you both eat ribeyes, yeah. Ribeye's juicy, it's fatty, like you feel kind of shit coming down your chin, right? But this is what dry aging does, is so much, it creates this enzymatic process where it is actually rotting the meat, it's breaking down the meat.
Right.
It's not a pretty process because it is decomposition. But when you do it in a controlled environment that has the humidity that's controlled, and the temperatures that controlled, and the salt that's ionizing it, it has an ionizing block, and it has a UV light, which kills all that bacteria. So what you're doing is no different than necessarily making a saucisson sec or something that you would be aging like
talk
a
French to
copa.
Me over there.
Oh, don't do it. But that or aging cheese. But you're just controlling the environment in which you're aging something. So this has lost a good deal of weight. So that is a pretty small ribeye.
Mm-hmm.
But quite frankly, if you ate that in that, you wouldn't really need much else
because
super rich. It's breaking down it's making the meat more tender. It changes the composition of it. And it's not for everybody either. And that's the thing that I want to state is that this is again, when we were talking about writing a menu, you don't write a menu that only you want.
Right.
So
right.
I want to have, there's going to be some dry aged on there that I'm going to be doing. There's going to be wet aged, which is what everybody else is used to that's just what you've eaten, but it's all going to be prime or prime plus, but you're going to have something on there that you can get. And then there's also something that you can be able to explore. So yeah,
so good.
You want to cut some more off? I mean,
we're going to eat that other one
oh
too.
Oh my gosh. That's so good.
I'll ask my last question and then I'll let you wrap up with yours. And I might have another throw in too. Cause
right,
this conversation.
Right before
hey guys, again, before we last question, cheers to the
cheers.
This
to you guys.
Is good.
Yeah.
Thank
I'm
you
glad
again
you guys
for
like this
being
wine.
Here.
How did it pair with the meat there?
Fantastic.
Yeah, I think you guys know what you're doing. It's
we try.
It's good. Yeah.
That the wine is really lively and kind of bouncy.
It is.
With also being a heavier wine, which is interesting.
So what's great about this is that bouncy texture and character that you're talking about makes this just as palatable if you weren't eating that. However, the tannins, the structure on that, like right. you got that
it's
nice
really
acid.
Dry. Yeah.
That it's still, but it's still juicy and it still has a good fruit to it. So it's not like you're drinking chalk necessarily.
Right.
It's not, yeah. but it is bouncy, but it's fun. Mm. But that's the kind of thing that I want to do with this restaurant. I want it to be fun. I want you to be talking about, I want this wine to spill a little bit on the table while you're eating the steak.
Yeah.
You know, like let's get a little loud. Let's get a little, like, let's get ridiculous. Let's
it's not Moss dancing on the table. Again.
Let's say, oh, God, damn shit. It. You know what? Little anecdote. I know I digress to the last question, but one of my favorite things, I was living in Denver.
We're in no rush.
We're good. Cool. Yeah. I ain't got anywhere to be. But I was in Denver. I was working at a restaurant there. It was a Vietnamese restaurant, incidentally, and there was another guy that was a cook with me, and he worked at a restaurant in downtown Denver, and at the time, the chef there had got named Best New Chef for Food and Wine, and the restaurant was called Adega. It's
wasn't Troy Gard.
No, it was Portuguese. Adega. Okay. I can't remember the guy's name, but Adega was Portuguese.
You guys are so much more cultured than I am.
Well, I lived in Denver, so I know. So, yeah.
No, Adega was long gone. Like, it was kind of, I mean, you know that market's a little different, and that was, but at the time, it was being considered nationally very, very well, and so he said that he actually delivered some food to a table and was like, how is everything? And the woman looked very prim and proper. She was very, very put together. And she looked me dead in the eye and goes, it's fucking delicious. And that's what I want. I want people to be able to drop their guard so much if they even had a guard to begin with.
Right.
You know, and so there.
This meat, this is why I actually stopped you.
Yeah, no, you're
fine. I want to say this because I've never had something that tastes, this makes me reminisce from eating biltong in South Africa.
Mm.
Oh. Have you ever had biltong?
No, I haven't.
It is
it's like jerky on steroids, right?
Yeah. Well, it's different than jerky.
Not actual. It's antelope, right?
But
it can be whatever meat you want it to be, but it's hung dry.
That's it.
And salted, but I don't know how long that they age it for. But that it has like everything that I wanted biltong to have, because this is still juicy and lively, but also at the same time has that real wild character to it. It's
really
cool.
That fifth flavor. Yeah.
Now I'm done interrupting you.
So you mentioned Soche, which was your first kitchen job, right?
No, not my first kitchen
job. Not your
job,
first kitchen
my
job?
My first executive chef position.
Your first executive. Okay, well then that works fine for this question too. What would the Trevor Tack who's opening Hemingway tell the Trevor Tack, who was the executive chef at Soche, now that you've had the years of experience in between? Get intellectual with me. Like, what's the one thing that you've learned through your successes and failures?
What would my younger self tell my older self?
No, what would you now
go back and tell him?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I guess either one would work, but yeah. We'll go older to younger.
I would hope that my younger self would come up here and tell me not to be, to keep that fearlessness.
Yep.
I would hope that he would come back and say, you know, you look like an old fat man, but
means you're eating well.
It means you're eating well. Yeah. Looks like you're doing well.
Yeah.
So
what about the reverse?
Get that cap in your toothpicks.
Right,
I'm so pissed. No, if I had to go back and look at that guy and say and give advice, that was such an interesting time. My mentor, Paul Kaplinger, who he was my first boss really at the Chalkboard. He passed away. And so I was so scared to open that restaurant. And then I had a chef there. His name was Jason Hart, and he was my sous chef, my right hand. He was a very very conflicted man. He was a brilliant cook, had infinite struggles with drugs and alcohol. And I was but his ability to cook and his tastes and flavors and profiles were so amazing. I leaned on him so much when we wrote the menu. We were very, very close. And it came to a point during that restaurant that he had to go. We couldn't maintain the relationship anymore. But I wish that I would have said back then, you're still enough without that. Like going into it, like don't be afraid. Don't have imposter syndrome. Everybody learns at the time you're doing it. That's the coolest part. Like everybody's learning in real time. There's not that many jobs that you can say that we go out and I have all of the knowledge and now I will do this job.
Gosh,
that's and especially that's, in cooking, it's absolute fucking bullshit that people say that you are learning in real time. There are so many times when you learn from a guest like they taste your beer or they'll eat my food and then they'll say, you know what, it had this, or you have somebody that you respect, like I remember once doing a dinner where I thought that, you know, I had kind of not ascended, but I felt pretty good about myself as a cook, and a better chef at that moment was like, that needs some fat so you can differentiate the acid in it. And I was like, a light bulb went off. I'm like, man, I miss being told things, you know, by people. Yeah. Like, I miss being able to do that. So always being able to surround yourself. You know, that's what I would go back and tell that kid. that no, watch out for them deceitful ladies.
They are rampant. Guys,
oh my word.
Oh, right on. Man. That's
goodness.
Yeah. That's good.
I think about that all the time.
I would ask you, let me ask you the same.
Yeah, same question. Yeah.
Oh.
So same question. What was your first brewing job?
My first brewing job was actually with Elgin Park.
Okay.
We worked together.
And yeah, you actually helped start it. You and I started that restaurant together.
Yeah, I opened that restaurant. I didn't know your involvement.
Yeah. Awesome.
He was our first brewer. So whenever we went off, Eric, he came over and helped us. But Austin was the dude because he was getting his brewery off the ground. So
yeah.
Did you train Ben?
Yeah, and then I trained Ben Bernie, who is there now and doing an excellent job. Kid. He is so smart. Yeah. And such a hard worker. So Elgin Park was my first gig in the brewery world, and working with Trevor, and I didn't start it. I wasn't like a part of the planning process or anything like that. But Eric Marshall of Marshall Brewing Company hired me because he was kind of the contracted master brewer of that brew pub. And he gave me the keys and to run the engine while he was gone.
It's a beautiful brewery.
Oh, it's so cool.
It was nice in there. Yeah,
it is like it's so compact and so awesome that it works because brew pubs always fascinate me because, like, I think that room is maybe 1,000 square feet.
Yeah. At the most.
And they produce, and Ben is producing something like 750 barrels a year out of 1,000 square foot room.
And it's delicious beer.
And it's delicious.
We were hamstrung when we opened, excuse me, steak. McClimp, the Russian Revolution was no Russian war revolution. Discuss. We were hamstrung. We could only do 3-2 at that time because the laws hadn't changed.
Right.
So that was something that I think that if I was ever in your shoes writing a resume, I'm like, tell me about a time that you you had an obstacle and overcame it.
Yeah.
That would have been it because, I mean, the stigma, everyone knows that is the stigma that 3-2 beer can't be shit. But you guys did it.
And we
did that until we were able to brew.
Well, and the interesting thing is that hurdle, brewing 3.2, technically we were calling it 4% alcohol by volume because it's 3.2 alcohol by weight.
Got it.
Back then. So in our terms, we would call it 4%. That is the hardest beer to make.
Exactly.
Because you can't mess up at all because you don't have any kind of ingredient backing you up to hide any of your mistakes. So every single time you turn on that brew house, every single time that a fermenter is on and going, there is no room for error or you have to pour it down the drain.
Yep.
And so
we were under a microscope being a restaurant group of that size.
Well,
you can go after a mom and pop. But if you go after something,
I will say Elgin Park is the most underrated, like that New Haven style pizza.
I was really proud of that.
I just love it.
I was really proud of the clam pizza.
Like
It was tough. I'd never opened a pizza restaurant before. It was hard. But like Brian,
would you consider it a pizza restaurant?
I would, but that's what I considered it. And things evolved, and that restaurant has evolved, and it's done its thing. You know, when we opened it, when we went to New York, we were doing simultaneously research. There was myself, Elliot, and Lindsay Rowe, who was the GM of the tavern and lounge, and we went to New York to do simultaneous research for the New Haven style pizza.
Mm-hmm.
And I had started like 3 weeks before, so we're like, come on, Tag, we're going to New York.
And I had never even been to New York, so I'm walking around with my, they're like, close your mouth. I'm like, I'm bringing Oklahoma to New York City. How y'all doing? But we went to several steakhouses, and then we went and ate all in New Haven in like 6 hours. And it was cool. And yeah. I got it. But that was, you know, again, goes back to our conversation. Like, how do you get inspired? Yeah. How do you do things? Well, you go and see the people that are doing it well. Yeah. And they were doing it well. And New Haven pizza was so foreign to everybody down here. And we started making that. We were there. There were so many defeats, but there were so many victories too. That restaurant took longer to open. So I got fat. I made so much pizza. We were making it every other day, and Brian Fontaine and I would.
I had a lot of pizza.
We would make it. Go and make
we
it.
We all gained a little bit of weight.
We did.
It's a. I look at photos before.
We can cut it even on Megan, but we called it our pizza titties. We decided that it's, the more pizza you eat as a man, the bigger your titties is going to get. And I had the Elgin Park pizza titties so bad. There's some photo evidence that I don't have.
That's so funny. But I'm not letting you off the hook. So, okay.
Oh, yeah.
That was your first. That was your first job.
Yeah.
So what would the Austin that's sitting here now on Tasting Room and running a successful brewery at Cabin Boys go back and tell the Austin McElroy at Elgin Park? Like, what's the one piece of advice? What was missing?
Oh, man.
Or what's the biggest thing you've learned, the most influential piece of knowledge?
What I would tell him then...
Get out of the business.
Golly, no. I'm kidding. No, because I don't think that
COVID's
I could...
COVID's coming.
Yeah, I'd be like, COVID is coming. It's kind of like winter is coming.
That actually should be the answer for everyone, but it can't
be. You should be terrified. Yeah.
No,
I'm gonna keep eating shrimp while you're talking.
I would say probably two things. Go for it more when it doesn't make sense.
Mm.
And kind of going off of that fearless thing.
What kind of sense, though?
But
are you talking financial sense or just common sense?
Common sense.
Yep.
When everybody tells you that's not going to work or that shouldn't work.
Right. So one, and I'm actually listening to myself now, and this is kind of going to, I mean, we're going to talk to LDF next week about this, our distributor that distributes all of our beer. We're kind of going to lean into Tulsa. Because Tulsa is a interesting culture and an interesting group of people that have no boundaries of what they actually like. And we're switching out Castline Kolsch and Quick Trip and putting in Bearded Theologian.
No kidding.
Because the gravitational...
We are ready for prime time. We just haven't been given the option yet.
Right.
As a client base. I'm saying that from like both sides. Like you and I, as clients of what people are serving... We would venture down that road with you. And that's what I'm saying. My challenge is to everybody, take that leap.
Yeah.
Go farther. Try harder. Because that's the only difference between what you said, Charleston, Louisville, New York. They've just been going out on a limb. And you know what? You don't always hit a home run.
No,
but
you don't.
But if you don't strike out more, then you're going
to
be...
What's the old, it used to be on like... people's walls. It was like, shoot for the moon. If you fail, at least you end up in the stars. You know, something like that, right?
I hope you have that poster at your house.
I wish I did.
You know what? I know what I'm getting you for Christmas.
You shoot for the stars and you might hit the moon. Is it the other way around? I've heard it both ways.
I think it's shoot for the moon, and if you don't get there, you at least...
Okay, I just made myself...
That makes more sense, right?
Shoot for the stars, and if you overshoot, you might hit the moon. Dreams are like trolley cars. There's plenty of them in the sea. Let's talk about this.
I was saying we got to get... There's one more, so open up your last beer and run on.
My word.
You guys,
I promise
you guys,
that we're going to get through this.
You guys should have me back. We'll bring more booze.
Yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that.
Thank you
so
much.
There you go. All right, so today I brought Trail Magic, which is...
Hazy IPA.
Yeah, we fell into the abyss. Yep. We caved.
You did the hazy.
We made a hazy IPA.
Were you always like upfront to that? You never wanted to do it?
Yeah, everybody has an IPA. Everybody does.
As a beer drinker, I flock to West Coast IPAs.
And that's totally...
Because everyone makes hazy, and you can almost chew it. It's almost...
So So I'm going to have to be honest with you guys.
Yeah.
Can I?
Yeah.
Can I share this with you? I am the shittiest beer fan you've ever met.
That's
and,
okay.
Hey, but you know wine and you know food. So,
well, that's, but that's not. But that's not my saying that I don't appreciate good beer. It's not. That's just. You won't find any IPAs in my fridge. You won't find those things. I do understand what they are, and I know how to drink them. But like I am.
So, what is your beer then in your fridge? Oh, if you were going to have beer in your fridge,
It's going to be the
don't
the
say lager-iest. Miller Lite.
No, it'll be the lagriest lager you can find. Yeah. Like honestly, like I prefer those light things. I do. I just I've gravitated towards it. So whenever somebody like. Tell me of this IPA. Like I want to know.
Sure.
I want to have those things. It's just when Arbar took off and when you and I met.
Yeah.
At that point in time, not only but beer, and you can mm-hmm. relate to this and but food, it was all based on this weird dare. Like how much can we pump in? How many IBUs can we put in it? How much mm-hmm. smoke and tobacco and chop hag, how intense
it was about the adjuncts.
Yeah.
Right?
How
it
much was, can
it,
we make
it,
this
it like, still oh, is very much
it still is.
Yeah. But then I
think pastries down.
Yeah, right.
When I drink a beer, I don't want to drink one. I want to drink a couple. Like I like drinking beer. I like that.
Right.
Like, so
yeah. You know what I had the other day? And I had it, shout out Jeremy Reed at Bar 46 after we went this to Nate Bargatze. It's great beer.
This is great.
Thank you very much.
I had...
Yeah, I'm going to tell you why.
Yes.
Let me...
Say this and do this.
I want to hear this.
I had a beer that it's not a local beer, but it might be my favorite beer, period. And for a while, I thought it was Pliny the Elder. I thought it was Pliny the Younger. I thought it was Blind Pig, which are all great from Russian River. Mm-hmm. Pilsner Urquell.
Oh, goodness.
Has been doing it for so long, and it is so fucking good.
It is.
And it
so
is so
good.
Consistent.
There's a thing to be said about, there was this whole big thing. When
I just hadn't had one in
my,
so long.
Mine is Augustiner Helles.
Right. Same idea. But best go ahead, Tech. What were you saying?
Yeah. Nah, it's the same shit. It's like, you know, for me, you have to understand that my job for the better part of my working career, my college career was all Keystone Light and bullshit. I mean, we were just drinking for a different thing.
Natty Light
but
beer.
Whenever you get off work, and literally, like, my job has mostly been fine dining or trying to pack flavor. Like, I'm talking about steak, butter, shellfish. I couldn't possibly chew down a Belgian quad at the end of the night.
No way.
And everybody was like, oh, you don't have the taste for it. I'm like,
no, I've just,
I'm full. I'm dying. Like, yeah. I want some strong water if I could just have a vodka. So that's great. Like, and that goes back to the thing like we don't have time for, but shaming people for their preferences on what they and how they like to service them. F that. That makes me so mad.
I'm going to pause you. My favorite thing to do, if I go out and I don't feel like drinking, I ask for a soda water and lime and a rocks glass.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
No one knows. Like, what are you drinking? Oh, vodka soda.
Oh, cool.
So
fuck everyone else is what
fuck
I'm saying.
Don't
let them convince you that what you're feeling
is right. You're not wrong. If you go out and spend your money, you're not wrong. Yeah. I'm not in the business of saying no. And people always ask, like, what if they ordered that 55-day dry-aged steak well done? I'm like, I serve them. Like, why isn't that Travis? I'm like, you know what? I don't care if they take it. Lick it, put it on their pants, do a jig around the restaurant, throw it on the floor, and then give me American dollars for it. We're cool. We're straight.
You might be describing my first experience at Hemingway. I don't
know.
You
want to do that?
We'll see.
You might. I'm going to film it.
But I don't want it well done. I'll
be like, damn, John Moss done lost his mind. Bet.
Bet.
Call me when you go. When you plan on doing that.
So please. Tell me of this beer.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's. Yeah, tell me about the beer.
No, so you're actually more of a brewer drinker in the beer world than anything else.
Really?
Because in the brewery world, for brewers, if you ask, I would say 90% of brewers are going to answer the same thing. We want, at the end of the day, we're going to drink a Pilsner. We're going to drink like Pilsner Urquell. Yeah. Like even
you can't taste anything.
Right. Because
you get blown out. Like it's,
we taste things day in, day out. Like today we just had our QAQC every Friday morning and at 8 a.m. And you know, we're tasting everything.
8 a.m. is early. You can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning.
8 a.m. That's true. But honestly, if you actually want to experience beer the most and
get drunk
or
in
wine,
the morning.
I'm not saying get drunk in the morning,
I see
but drink a beer
all
in the morning.
You're giving me all kinds of good.
Drink a beer in the morning.
Pee-wee.
because your palate is most susceptible for picking up minute aromas and flavors.
Is that why coffee tastes so much better in the morning?
Absolutely.
Because you start blasting out your taste buds.
Yeah.
Yeah. After
that's
that.
Interesting. Yep, exactly. Yeah. So anyways.
And coffee's delicious.
Trail Magic is a hazy IPA. And we did
the question we asked 15 minutes ago.
We did. We
feel responsible.
We did about a year's worth of research on this, and talked with a brewery out in California called Burgeon, and it was just kind of a special circumstance of friendship that helped us produce this. And there's a new technology out there that is allowing us to get the hop aromas and flavor into the beer without the bitterness. So that's why
this is so soft. I like that so much more because it does have that like banana-y, pineapple-y, tropical side.
Yep.
But it without that, like, and I don't mind flavors. I like bitter flavors. I like Maros. I like those things. But when it comes to a beer, like again, that I don't want 12 ounces of that.
Do you know what hops you use?
How many IBUs?
No, what hops are in that? Oh, what hops do you use?
Cryo.
If not, I can edit it out. But
I've heard they've recently put more hops in it.
Hops in it.
We've got Cryo Simcoe, traditional Simcoe, and Citra.
Does Cryo mean it's cryogenically frozen?
Cryogenically frozen, and the vegetal matter is removed away from pollen or the oils.
Yeah.
That. Okay. Produce the flavors, and that's why it's so soft.
What makes this, for me, not understanding that, what makes a hazy IPA versus a non-hazy, or what would you say, like, so there's IPA and there's hazy IPA?
Or right.
What's the differentiating?
So West Coast
IPA is, so it's either West Coast or hazy?
Yeah, those are the two different styles of IPAs.
And that's it?
There's plenty more out there. There's the West Coast, there's Mid Coast, there's...
Okay, so it's not just, but the predominant player.
I don't know if I've ever had a mid-coast IPA.
Wait, or a no-coast IPA.
Midwest. I was like, is that the Great Lakes? From is that Bell's? I love
that's
Bell's.
That's about Two-Hearted.
Two-Hearted. Two-Hearted Ale.
Shout out to Danny.
Oberon Day. Anyways. Yes, Oberon Day?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they let the colleges around there. They let them out for Oberon Day. They used to.
Did they right on?
Yeah, Oberon used to be a lot smaller, so they would it's Oberon Day, and they would shut the college.
You vacationed
down.
Like up in the Finger Lakes, right?
Or up in Lake Michigan and all that.
Yeah,
my dad's from Detroit. But,
And so I'm not like shit talking any of the breweries that invented this style, because it is a really cool style to make. It's a really fun. Has a gives us an opportunity to research hops and grow new hops. But truly, the breweries that invented this at one point in time just couldn't figure out how to make their beer clear.
So it was lazy.
I'm not going to say that.
So next time I go to a brewery, I'm going to say, if I see hazy IPA, I'm going to say, hey, can I get the lazy IPA?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm going to be completely honest with you. I would buy this.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
I would not... If I wouldn't say that. I'd just be like, this is nice. This is very good. Awesome. But no, I would totally drink this again. And this is coming from a staunch IPA.
You would drink their lazy IPA.
I would drink
thank you.
Lazy IPA.
It was. It's actually kind of.
Shit. You could do that on the label.
It's kind of hard to.
Lazy IPA.
That's pretty good.
Putty. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
You're welcome for your next marketing strategy.
Hey, cut.
We're out.
Going home, Brady.
Last question.
You got it. Yeah.
Finally,
I'm gonna have a send off, but I've already asked my third. So,
okay. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure.
You asked 18 last week. So,
I did.
It's
you,
my
you,
turn.
You get some. You get.
I get a couple.
Yeah, I love all the glasses. It's like
I know. This
like,
is
can we? Opulence, can we just like, knock this best. Down? The only thing would be better if we were all smoking cigarettes, just ashes on the table. We
should. Yeah.
This has been a great party.
Go ahead, ask your question.
Yeah. Okay. Now I feel like I'm on the spot.
No, you're not.
It's good. You can always cut the stuff. There is a little piece. Johnny wants more of the steak.
I don't cut tack.
Oh,
but I am going to take.
Go for it.
This is it's.
No, you take that one. I'll take this one.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.
Do you know,
if you're not watching, this sounds really weird. But
come on, I'll feed you. Shh. You'll be doing.
There you go.
The butter's congealed.
I just got fed by Trevor.
Do you remember what your last question was at this point?
At this point, I'm trying to be like,
you're going to have the meat sweats.
If you want. Like, I got a send-off question, though.
You have a send-off question?
I do.
Do you want some more red wine? Anybody?
Yeah.
So we were talking about earlier, and this is my thanks, question. I re-downloaded it.
Okay. You went back. You found it.
Do it. that's a reference to 1964.
Yeah,
blow the cartridge.
The 1990s, when they told you not to blow into the cartridge. That sounded really
glad you
bad.
We have gone so far away. I wish we got a storyboard of this meeting.
Oh, that could have been bad. Anyways, now I'm sweating. Okay, so it's going off of coming back to Tulsa and Tulsa's culture and really what, you know.
Serious
question. I want to know, because in the craft brewery world, we're really collaborative. And you've been talking about how you've been learning and talking to other chefs in the area. Is the restaurant group within Tulsa specifically a competitive group where you can't like reach a hand across the street and learn from each other, or is because I honestly don't know what.
No, absolutely not. Like, this is one of my, again, like, I started cooking and professionally in 2005. I that's when I baby moved tech to Tulsa. Like, I moved here. There was a girl involved. She dumped me a few days before I was supposed to move to Tulsa. My friends in Dallas were like, come down to Dallas. I was like, no, I've already got an apartment. I'll move over there. But why I have chosen to plant my flag here is not only because I love the city and there's a lot of other things, but one of the biggest things that I love about this town is the collaborative nature that you're talking about with the chefs. Like, my best friends and people that I have grown with are doing big, big things in this town right now. You know, like, the things that, like, I've got to see a lot of very cool stuff within this community. And John, I know that you've had an interesting window.
I was going to say
that,
like, half of our fantasy football league is doing badass shit.
But if you look at it, like, say Trey, for example, like, Trey and I are, he's one of my best friends in the entire world. And Trey was working in a machine shop and was miserable. And I looked at him one day, and we'd been buddies for a while. And I'm like, do you want to try cooking? That was literally like a conversation at Arnie's. Yeah. Do you want to try cooking? He's like, I'll try it out. Like, I can't pay you a dick. Like, I can get you in there, and it's probably it's just whatever. But he did it. And we've had moments like that. The gentleman that I was talking about before, the sous chef, Jason, that when Trey got his big night was when Jason was drug sick. I picked him up and he was on heroin. He was supposed to not do that, obviously, but he had done it. Mm-hmm. He had been clean and then he relapsed. And so I put him in the office. I'm like, you got until five to get to a moment where I can have you on the grill, and he couldn't do it. And so I said, Trey, this is actually one of my favorite stories in all of my cooking history. I said, Trey, I don't want you to be afraid, but I'm going to need you to get on grill tonight. And he had never really, he didn't know what a fresh pineapple looked like. I'm sorry, Trey, I'm going to have to tell the story. But he'd never seen a fresh pineapple or a live lobster. Like, he just didn't come from a background where he saw all those things. And so that night, and I looked at him and I said, I'm not going to let you, I won't let you go down. I'm not going to yell at you.
You're like, not going to let him drown.
I looked at him and I said, trust me, I promise. And that was it. He did. And I'll never take that trust for granted. Because that was a very stressful moment for me too, because I'm like, I literally have to run an entire, and we were booked.
Yeah.
I mean, we were, that was one of the nights where that slow ass restaurant was very booked. We had a show.
And that was it. So Trey.
Yeah. Right. And I said, Trey, I said, whenever you put it on, like, put it on, mark it, put it off. And whenever it comes time to, like, hand me the filet, I'll tell you how long to put it in the oven for, and then you can give it back to me. I said, please just trust me. I won't let us go down. And we did it. And we did it that night. And that night, Trey he came to a position, I believe this, is that he got to a position in that moment where he felt empowered that he hadn't felt for a long. He was a young. He was young. Mm. He was like 24 at this time, and he'd been working in a machine shop where it's like stamp and license plate, you know. He felt like I can do something, and he has made such a beautiful career out of what he's doing, and he's doing some of the most exciting things that this town is seeing right now. And I love that I'm a part of his bigger story. I love that I was there then and to be his friend and to be able to coach him.
I've heard about the drunken debauchery that you guys got into and all the stuff. I mean, but it's just part of the story.
It's part of the story, but of the drunken debauchery didn't really we both knew that was not sustainable.
Right.
Like that wasn't, I want to do things here.
Right. And, no, I say that saying that you guys have that relationship, that trust in that relationship.
No, we had those things. I remember killing a lobster. I was like, do you want to know how to kill a lobster, Trey? He's like, sure. So you grab the knife, you take the lobster, and you stab it in his head, and you come it down. And he's like, that is the most metal thing I've ever seen in my life. I was like, now you try. And then there was also a time where he cut his finger, and then he started to pass out. And he's like, I go outside and smoke a cigarette. I'm like, Trey, I swear to Christ, if I would have saw you in a pass out in a heap with a minuscule pool of blood around your pinky, I would have fired you. But digression, this town is so receptive. We are a friendly town. That's why I want us to collectively go farther. That's why I think that we're all chomping at the bit.
Right.
We're all like, it's not a look at me, because we really don't. Like, we don't need that. We are self-sustained, and we could be self-sustained forever, but why not get a little bit of look from outside? We could sit here and do what we do until I'm old. But I want it to be more. I want it to be more for you, and I want it to be more for you. I want it to be more for everybody. I want people to be opening Bon Appetit magazine or turning on the TV and be like, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, let's check this out, or let's see this, and let's get ridiculous. We have the tools, and we have the people. We have the talent. Mm-hmm. We have the know-how and the fucking gumption to go out there and get it.
Amen.
And I am fucking sick and tired of people telling us, or even just brushing it off. I don't need that. I don't care about that. I want us to just do it. And then when it's done and we're looking back and we're cheersing each other in a couple years, we'll say, yeah, that was the undercurrent. That was the undercurrent.
Man.
But we're there.
Asking my fault. That's it. I'm ending on that.
Cheers to that.
Trevor Tack, go eat it. Hemingway is opening when?
December.
December?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And the thing that Trevor has been asking is
Cabin Boys is making.
There it is.
Thank you.
Cabin Boys is making a beer for the Hemingway. And you're talking about going for it.
Yeah.
So when the idea of the Hemingway began, at that time it was called 1515.
Yep.
Yeah. It's evolved.
It's evolved. And this was over 2 years ago.
Which is the address, and, right?
Well, yeah, that's the address.
It's 15th Street.
So. Yeah. I'm really proud of my past self. So past self 2 years ago, high five. You did great. because I sat down with, Eric and Brett and I sat down with them and I said, okay, if we're doing this and you want a house ale, I'm going to go balls to the walls.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my idea. We're going to do verticals. We're going to have it always wine barrel aged. It's going to be a wine vintage. And we're going to put the year date on it as it is a vintage. And it's going to be something that people in Tulsa who drink beer have never thought of beer that way before. So the beer that we're releasing first with the Hemingway is a Syrah barrel aged beer to guard that's going to be 13.5%. It's in the barrel right now.
And it's going to be a 750.
And it's going to be a 750
wine bottle.
Corked and caged. Yeah. Corked and caged wine bottle. Real slim.
Like a Spanish style, right?
Yeah. Real slim label on the bottom of it. So it's going to be really cool to present in that way. And
it's solely for us.
And it's solely for you.
Yep. Mm. And we've got an X amount of bottles that we have... That we're going to sell and we're all really, really excited about it.
Yeah.
It's going to be one of those things that, again, everything that we're doing in this restaurant is purposeful.
Yep.
Everything that we're doing, like from the lights, from the bathroom tile to the wine, to the beer that we've talked about for 2 years.
Yeah.
And that's, and you guys have been talking about this beer before I even came aboard.
Right.
So I was brought up to speed afterwards. I was like, I'm sorry, wait, what the fuck? We're going to do a, like we bought wine. Okay. Let's do this. But as it's evolved, this is going to be so much more fun to be able to talk about, because at that point, this place was going to be this embarrassment of riches. Like, oh, we're just going to have all the nice stuff. But now it's funneled and we've got the right people and we've got the people in play and the aces are in their places and we're ready.
And I'm so ready.
Yeah.
I feel like I left one thing out. I don't know if I should ask the last question, though, because this is a good spot to end. But you brought magic powder. And so the last question, I'll let you end on this. So, and it kind of harkens back to the Trey Winkle conversation, because I would probably say 80%. I'm a decent chef at home.
Yeah, right? You can cook.
And so,
I've seen you throw down. It's good. Yeah,
like 80% of what I know is from...
I'm terrible.
Is from Trey coming over. We do bottle shares.
He's a gracious man.
And then
man.
He starts opening the refrigerator, opening the pantry. And I'm like, I didn't go to the store. And he's like, I don't care. Like, look, you have this, and this. Here's how you make this. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, shit, you're right. So your word of advice for the home chef that's watching this.
Okay.
What would it be? Is it use magic powder? Don't be scared of magic powder. What is magic powder? There's a bunch of questions within this question.
I'm thinking this is some sort of drug.
No, it's not cocaine.
I'm
going to tell you this much right now. I'll look right in the camera. It's just fucking food. Don't be afraid. It's okay. We actually can mess up in this. And I've messed up more than I've ever succeeded. And that's the God's honest truth. If you, like, it doesn't matter. Try it. If it doesn't work, don't worry about it. Because you can start over again. Like, yes, is food waste a tragedy? Yes. But if you really are serious about cooking and wanting to do stuff and find your niche, find where you like, read, and then just do it.
Yep.
And then if it doesn't work, if you don't like that, adjust it. Keep that mental catalog where you're saying like, oh, yeah, this particular time didn't work or that seasoning didn't work. You know, I started cooking because my mom didn't cook. She didn't want to cook. And she's like, I'll go to the grocery store and get it. I was making sauteed mushrooms. I was putting everything you could in there. But again, it's just fucking food. We're not curing cancer. We're not flying to the moon.
Right.
We're not doing that. Just reminded food.
Me, when I first started cooking, when I learned how to cook, it was when I was at my late grandparents' house. God, this is a memory I haven't thought of in forever. But it was, I used to go into her.
That's what food does.
Pantry.
There's nothing that locks you into your heart moments.
I would
like
go
that.
Into the pantry and I would grab all of her spices.
Yep.
And I would start making this concoction.
Whatever.
I mean, it was 12 bottles deep.
Wretched.
Of just like, oh, I can't imagine. And I'd be like, here, do you want to try it? She'd be like, no. But she wouldn't. To her credit, she would not. You know, she would not try it. But yeah, it's so funny you said that. Yeah, right? I mean, it's just like, that was my first experience.
But no,
in the
but it is. It's just fucking food. You know that? Yeah. And like that. And if you're cooking for a dinner party, get all your shit done before so you can enjoy your dinner party.
Yep.
Yeah.
But again, that's it though. It is just food. Don't think about this more than it should be. Like I did, this isn't fair, but I did all this between meetings. Like getting all this stuff ready to, like, honestly, yeah, that took a long time to age, but like getting it all together and everything, it's just an ounce of planning is worth a pound of prevention, or an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of...
Yeah, whatever. What? We know where you're going with that. We've had a few ounces of alcohol.
Sweet Berry Wine!
Sweet Berry Wine! On that note, Trevor Tagg, Hemingway opens in December.
Thank you guys. I'm so honored to be here. Yeah. This makes me so happy. Thank you.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers.
We'll be right back after the break.
Thanks. Thank you.
And that is Trevor Tagg, executive chef of Watershed / Hemingway, which is... If what we ate and drank was any example of what that's going to be like, I mean, just go check it out, all right?
He brought it.
I mean, my gosh. And for the record, magic powder is MSG.
Okay. I was wondering what magic powder...
We never said it.
Yeah. Up until this moment, I still didn't know what magic powder was.
He told me earlier when he was setting everything up, he was like, this is what people are afraid of. It's the magic powder. It's MSG. And I was like, oh, yeah.
It does make dreams come true.
It does. I mean, just, I've known him for years. Fantastic guy. And I can't wait to see Hemingway. Like, he took me through a walkthrough about a month ago. I want to go see it, you know, in a few months when they start doing, or maybe a month or so, when they start doing tastings and, you know, trials and all that stuff. But it'll be the spot. It's in the basement of, I said the address earlier, 1515 15th.
It's basically the new apartment building on Cherry Street.
Cycle Bar is on like street level, and then Sidecar Bar from Oklahoma City is on the rooftop, and Hemingway's in the basement.
Right on.
Yeah.
Cool. It'll be a really cool spot.
It will. It'll be really cool.
Right.
That was fun. That was a lot of fun. Coming up in the next couple of episodes, I believe Chase Healy will be joining us from American Solera.
Eric Marshall at some point.
From Marshall's Brewing Company. We might have a couple of barbecue peeps join us. So it's just going to be, I hope you guys are having fun.
We're certainly having fun. That was really fun.
That was good. I need some more of that King Crab, bro. Come on.
That was awesome. Whew.
All right. Thank you guys for watching. We'll see you on the next episode of The Tasting Room.
Cheers. We'll